Well Actually is a podcast about reimagining the way we approach the entirety of the birthing year. Margot's goal is to combine her radical imagination with her knack for strategizing to bolster the birth revolution and a larger global revolution of feminine consciousness. Well Actually is a production of the Indie Birth Association and IndieBirth.org. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event. Now here's your host, midwife and teacher, Margot Blackstone.
Hey, if you're listening to this, you are listening to a new series of mine where we are doing a behind the scenes of midwifery visits. So talking to women who are looking for preconception, prenatal, and postpartum support. And this is a really fun experiment because I, for the first time, am recording these virtual sessions, which we have been doing for a long time here at Indie Birth, even pre-pandemic stuff. So we have had many years of virtual visits that we have done as midwives, and this has been an idea we've kicked around for a while. One, because we really like to do sessions with women all over the world. It's a really amazing way to utilize this whole internet thing so we can build a stronger, you know, birth community. So that's really exciting. I always love doing these kinds of visits. And this has the doubly cool aspect, which is that we are recording them so that you can listen in. So that might be cool for you because you are also a pregnant mama or a preconception mama or a postpartum mama. And you can sort of glean some wisdom from these women and the conversations that they have with me. Or you might be a birth worker, a doula or a midwife, who knows, maybe an OB or a nurse who is looking to learn more about this wise woman model that we teach here at Indie Birth. And what better way to learn than to listen in and sort of do this virtual apprenticeship with me. So we are making this available to the public, and we're also going to be incorporating it into our teachings here at Indie Birth for the doulas that we train and the midwifery students that we have as part of the Indie Birth Midwifery School. So those are some of the reasons why this little mini series was created, and I hope that you really enjoy them and pass them along to anyone who might benefit.
So I will be 27 weeks pregnant on Thursday with my second child. Everything is going well as far as I know. Probably the biggest symptom right now that I'm struggling with is just continued nausea here in the 27th week. So that took me by surprise. It's not what I experienced the first time around. And then aside from that, have had some fears about nutrition and weight gain come up. Really, as I'm processing my last birth experience, that had a lot of diagnoses and intervention attached to it. I'm currently working with two local licensed midwives and just have a lot of fear because I am just apprehensive of letting anyone into this experience. So I have them sort of at arm's length. And they probably don't really know that, but that's kind of my way of both having the option of having a midwife attend my birth, but also not, you know, I just have fear of giving them any information about what's going on with me because I experienced so much trauma last time.
Okay, that seems like a good place to start as opposed to kind of leaping into this pregnancy and then having to backtrack.
Right, yes.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about your first pregnancy?
Okay, so first pregnancy, I had a OB that was recommended to me. I was really excited to be pregnant, really had already been exposed to positive birth stories, but was still kind of a newbie concerning some of the risks of working in, you know, of having a pregnancy in the medical system. And yes, so had an OB who was kind of like well loved in my community, and ended up just kind of by default going with her, and I had every kind of diagnosis under the sun. I'm trying to think of where it started. I guess started with gestational diabetes.
Okay.
Strep B or whatever it's called, positive.
Yep.
High blood pressure.
So you were diagnosed with gestational diabetes.
I was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that was the first time that I noticed a big shift in my care. Kind of just treated differently by the staff and by my doctor. Really kind of talked down to. And yeah, so that's kind of where things shifted, I think. And then it kind of just went downhill from there until an induction at 37 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and then just a really emotionally difficult, I'll probably cry.
Yeah.
But a really emotionally difficult labor and birth. And, you know, from the outside, it looks like, you know, things went pretty well. I had a vaginal birth, got an epidural at some point to try to lower my blood pressure. And that worked to lower my blood pressure. So, yeah, so it's a little bit too hard to explain to others why it was so hard.
Yeah. What felt emotionally hard about it? Because that certainly makes sense to me, you know, that it could look one way on the outside but not feel that way.
Right.
So, yeah, what was hard about it for you?
I think feeling like my two choices were, you know, risking harming my baby and going with my intuition, which was to delay the induction. And I made the decision after the doctor said, you know, didn't ask but said, like, you are going to be induced today. You need to go directly to the hospital from our office. You can't pack a bag, you know. And I made the decision to go to my acupuncturist from there to try to help. I mean, I was like chugging red raspberry leaf tea on the way to the hospital and went to the acupuncturist and just like, you know, sobbing, just said like, please figure out, you know, do something to help this induction. Cause I was like, you know, not dilated, not ready for an induction.
Yeah.
And by the time I got to the hospital, my doctor was pissed that I hadn't gone directly there. And I just couldn't stop crying the entire time. And, you know, I didn't want any of the interventions that were offered, but I was terrified that if I didn't go along with it, then I would lose the opportunity to have a vaginal birth. So I just kind of cried through the whole thing, and you know, the doctor and nurses were all saying like, why are you crying? And I just, you know, wasn't even worth explaining because they didn't get it. And then by the end of the labor, I just tried to stay really quiet and pretend that I wasn't getting close to the end because I didn't want the doctor to come back in the room. And so I essentially stayed really, really quiet until the baby was crowning. And then, of course, I started making noises that you can't, you know, you can't hide at some point that you're having the baby. And she came in, flicked on the lights, you know, and in bold letters in my written birth plan, I had, you know, no, please, you know, please don't touch my perineum during pushing. And the first thing she did was start stretching my perineum with her hands. And she even said, you know, I know that you said you didn't want this, but you need me to do this.
Wow.
And looking back, that's one of the hardest moments, because I just remembered kind of leaving my body and thinking, like, you know, it's over.
Wow, that's so terrible. I'm really sorry that that happened to you.
And then everyone in the community loves her, so I felt like I couldn't talk to anybody about it. Because everyone's response, you know, friends and stuff were all like, wow, I've never heard, you know, I can't believe, you know, she's so well liked. Like, I can't believe that she would be. But I think it was all pretty standard, you know. It's just I'm ultimately feel, and I feel like all women probably are on some level. We teach ourselves not to be, or we train ourselves not to be, but I do think I'm particularly sensitive to, you know, life in general.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think the question anytime that there's a provider that's well-liked in a community, it's like, well, well-liked by who, you know, and what are those people's expectations? And
right,
exactly. When people don't understand physiological birth and they don't get a physiological birth, like they don't care that much. But when someone goes in wanting something, yeah. So it's hard, you know, to know. And so often people don't even know, like, you know, when I debrief birth stories with people, they often don't remember that moment even. And I don't know if it's because they also like just kind of dissociated,
right,
in a different way, or if they just, yeah, I don't know. It's hard sometimes to get those details out of people, and it's either because they don't remember or they maybe don't want to remember, you know, so
right. That's exactly.
Really terrible. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So my current midwives, just to give you a little context, they've been really wonderful, and they're home birth midwives. They, one of two options of home birth midwives in my community. Okay. And I've attended the birth of my cousin that they were the providers for, and it was really beautiful. It was a pretty textbook birth though. And, so they felt like the best choice for me. And I, you know, I can honestly say they've been wonderful. But I've kind of gone in scared of every appointment, afraid of getting a high blood pressure reading in particular. And just, yeah, just afraid of being missed out. As I get a bit closer, I'm kind of gaining more confidence in my, you know, in my journey to like being the healthiest version of myself in pregnancy, and feeling pretty confident that I am really healthy. I'm beginning to feel that way, although it's been a lots of ups and downs along the way, but but, you know, now my fear is sort of transferring to, you know, potential hospital transfer. They've mentioned and alluded to a lot of stories of hospital transfer. And in the first meeting, one of the two midwives, the one that I feel less close with, said, you know, kind of this blanket statement of, we're not here to protect home birth. We're here to protect the lives of mom and baby, so we will transfer you. And so that, you know, put fear, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's a couple different things I think would be really cool to talk about. I think that is good to talk about no matter what, because it can happen, right? Mm-hmm. And there might be a situation where you find yourself wanting to go in for something, right? Like,
yes.
So I think that maybe would be a cool place to visit last. Okay. But I wanted to know more about, so like the gestational diabetes diagnosis, What did that look like for you? Were your numbers good at home, like when you were checking, or like, yeah, how did that look?
Yeah, so this particular physician skips the like the shorter 1 hour test. And so she,
oh, how lovely.
Yeah. So I only ever did the like whatever the 3 hour diagnostic test.
It was like awful.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, the only option was the Glucola, and I failed that. I remember her saying, I don't know the exact number, but I remember her saying, you didn't just fail by a little bit, you really failed. So like the type A student that I am, I, you know, of course got the glucose meter and never had a single high blood sugar reading the entirety of the rest of my pregnancy.
It's amazing.
Didn't have any issues in the hospital, because you know they test your blood sugar there. And then my baby didn't have any issues, even at 37 weeks, didn't have any issues with blood sugar after he was
born. Yeah. How big was your baby?
He was 6 pounds exactly.
Okay. So obviously not a giant baby.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's a whole thing, right? Gestational diabetes mm-hmm. is a whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've educated yourself, so I won't talk too much about it. I guess from, you know, in this context of like, you know, doing this little virtual visit with me, if you came to me as a client and you told me you had failed the 3 hour, but then you never had any high readings after that, I would just essentially erase that from my memory. Like, I would not care at all. Like, if we didn't have this ridiculous test, we wouldn't know the difference, right? Like,
right.
And what does it matter when moment to moment your blood sugar was within range, right? So, okay, we can kind of just like magic wand that away. So, right. And I wouldn't even write down that you had gestational a history of it. Like, to me, that's just ridiculous. So,
I agree.
Cool. Okay. So, tell me about the high blood pressure then. And I don't know, do you know that I also am a person who had high blood pressure in pregnancy?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of my jam. So I'm really curious to hear what that was like.
So I'm really glad, because this is one of probably my biggest worry. But yeah, so I don't know. I really wish I had my medical chart in front of me, but I don't know. They said after the fact that my blood pressure was a little high, whatever that means, all along, or kind of from the middle of pregnancy onward. I had one or two, I believe it was two, kind of like pretty high readings in the office. And then it was the first time I had a what they were calling stroke level blood pressures, which my husband is a nurse and he said they're not stroke level blood pressures. I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but there was one reading and I remember I was really scared to go in that time because they had been talking about induction.
Because of what?
Because of, good question. My doctor said she intuitively thought that this baby would need to be delivered early. And I was like, what about my intuition?
Hold up. Okay. So I have a really interesting story.
Okay.
Mostly for people listening. I think you'll think it's interesting too, but I recently had a transport here for blood loss after the birth. And the doctor said to this woman, I intuitively feel like your hemoglobin number is blank. And I was like, okay, wait, so it's okay for you all to intuitively decide things, but us midwives and moms, that's crazy, but it's okay for you to just like
make
things up. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love that. So the talk of induction started, you know, fairly early and it was kind of thrown around. And then,
that was before any high blood pressure readings?
Well, she said it was on the high end of normal. So I think I had, I'm not good with this stuff, but is it the top number that's higher? She said it was like in the 130s was the top number along the way. And I have white coat syndrome anyway, so I kind of always have this issue when I go any doctor. But anyway, so I had one high reading. She sent me directly to labor and delivery to be monitored. And when I got to the hospital, I just felt more comfortable there than I felt in the doctor's office, and had totally normal readings when I went to be monitored. And so,
do you remember how many weeks you were? And that was the first time, right?
Right. I think this was 35 and a half or 36 weeks.
Okay.
And so they sent me home, and then I went back in for the next visit. And I remember like sitting in the chair that the tech took my blood pressure, and she like hissed at me. I don't know how to like say that word. She was like, doctor is not going to like this. You know, like, right. Like you know, you should have done better. Like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm even, she didn't even tell me the number, but they brought me into an exam room, and then they took it manually. And then my husband was with me this time. And, the next thing that happened was just the doctor coming in and saying, so you're having a baby today. This is a stroke level blood pressure. This is when she said, you got to go directly to the hospital. Can't go home for your bag, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And that was at 37 weeks.
And that was at 37 weeks. 3 days, I think. And when I got to the hospital, finally, that evening, after kind of going to the acupuncturist and stuff on the way, I had normal blood pressures once I got to the hospital. And it was interesting because every time I felt the cuff tighten, I was like scared, like, oh no, this will be the time
that right.
make me get a C-section or whatever. And one of the last nurses that I had toward the end of my induction, you know, I finally just said, you know, I'm really scared about my blood pressure. And the nurse said, your blood pressure is not abnormal. I'm not worried about your blood pressure. And we realized, the nurse and I together, that whenever the doctor would come in and I smelled her perfume, my blood pressure would raise. Wow. So that's another reason why I really wanted her to stay outside of the room and kind of as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
until the baby was crowning, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much there. Did you say your husband's a nurse?
He is, yes.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you've maybe had some of these conversations, but I guess for the sake of making sure, you know, the other really huge thing is how a blood pressure is taken, you know, like whether it's, you know, a machine,
yeah.
That's what I'm going for, versus manual, and like the size of the cuff. And then of course, yeah, the environment. And some people really are more sensitive. Like you said, you have sort of white coat hypotension. And if your numbers were higher in the office, and then lower in the hospital. So are you saying that your blood pressure was essentially normal in labor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And then you said something about the epidural being to bring it down. Was there a part where it got higher?
So when my doctor came in, she was not on call for the beginning of the time that I was there. And then she started kind of stopping in. So there was a point where they did a Foley bulb catheter, and the doctor was in the room for that. My blood pressure went up during that experience. That was pre-epidural, and I was really scared of that procedure. It was kind of framed like, it's fine if you want to decline the Foley bulb, but it'll probably result in a C-section. So I was like, okay, I have to just, anyway, so that was a process, and I'm, again, kind of scared of medical stuff, so I was like, just really scared. And so my blood pressure went up around that time. And it was sort of like a brief window that it went up. I had already been at the hospital for probably like, gosh, I think it was like 12 hours already. They had done several rounds of Cytotec.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so it was the first time that I had a high blood pressure reading in the hospital. It was around the time of the Foley bulb. And that's when they started. Essentially found out later that my doula was kind of friends with the doctor, which was just wonderful. And she was like sort of chatting about it out in the hallway with the doctor. And the doctor kind of told her to tell me that I probably needed to get an epidural if I wanted to have a vaginal birth. And so my doula came in and told me that. And I remember looking at my husband and just being so defeated. I wasn't in any pain. So I wasn't like asking for an epidural for pain. Anyway, she framed it like, I know you want a vaginal birth, like let's do the epidural. And I was just so defeated. I was just like, fuck it. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I'm okay. I'm doing it. Whatever. Like all of my dreams have been shattered. So why even try at this point?
Yeah. Why not this one too?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like that in the situation you were in, that might have been true, you know, like that was maybe your best shot at getting a vaginal birth, which, you know, it sucks to be in those situations where like all of a sudden the goals have rearranged themselves from like one thing to another. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So did you ever have protein in your urine?
So
did they ever do magnesium sulfate?
Mm-hmm. So I didn't, they didn't detect protein in my urine from just the like normal screen. But when I initially said, and I realized I'm jumping around a ton, so I hope this is kind of making sense to you. But essentially, after that first high blood pressure reading, she wanted to induce me immediately. And that was when I went to the hospital to initially be monitored and I had normal blood pressures.
That was 35, 36 week
time. She said, this is only going to get worse. Like we will find protein in your urine, these kinds of statements. And I said, okay, well, what do I need to do? So she had me do the like, whatever it's called, where you actually like go to the hospital and you get the bag and you pee for like 24 hours into the bag.
Yeah.
So I did that two separate times. She said that there was normal levels of protein in my urine both times, but that it was slowly increasing. I didn't have a diagnosis of preeclampsia and I didn't have to do the magnesium sulfate. She said that this number will continue to climb and then it could be a whole different situation where, you know, of course, it could later be an emergency C-section or whatever.
Yeah. Did they ever do any blood pressure meds in labor?
No.
Or just the epidural?
Just the epidural.
Interesting. So this is all so interesting. I mean, and also so common. It's not an uncommon story. And the crux of the issue is that we have no idea what on earth preeclampsia is. Like, we have theories, we have ideas, we don't actually know. And we also are totally freaked out by it, you know, midwives included.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, there's those really classic, like, this will become preeclampsia statements. Like, they're not true. Like, we don't have any way to know who's going to have gestational hypertension that doesn't actually turn into anything else versus people who it is the beginning of what's going to become preeclampsia. Like, there is absolutely no way to know. There's a couple different screening indicators that I've read about and that, you know, they say not to use in clinical decision making, but they're kind of interesting and I will have to look them up again to send them to you. I can't remember exactly what those indicators are, but it might be something to look at. Where is I going with that? Other than to say, yeah, I mean, I had not to get super personal or talk about myself too much, but I had an OB say the exact same thing to me in my first pregnancy. I only saw an OB one time in my 34th week of pregnancy, and I already had probably way higher blood pressure than you were experiencing based on what you've described. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, you know, this would be, and I didn't actually go to get a consultation around what he would do with me. I actually just wanted to go consult about the blood pressure medication that I was on and maybe try a different one. And he was like, well, this is, you know, you're going to have an induction at 37 weeks. If you don't have preeclampsia before then. So 37 weeks at the latest, maybe sooner.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, as same exact thing where someone's like making a prediction mm-hmm. about the future based on what's in front of them in the moment. And that's not really a smart thing to do, but I get it. They see that, right? Like they've seen it progress that direction. But they've also seen it progress not that direction. So I don't know why they try to like put the fear of God into people mm-hmm. when they have just a few high readings.
Yeah.
Go for it. Sorry.
So I'm guessing that yours did not progress in that direction.
No, I had really high blood pressure and never any protein in my urine. And I had both my babies at home, one at 40 and 3 and one at 39 and 5. And the second time it was not as high as the first, but it was definitely high. And so I talk about this in other places too. Like, I'm not saying everyone should do that mm-hmm. by any stretch, mm-hmm. But I knew for me that that was the right choice mm-hmm. And was willing to take responsibility if it wasn't, you know, and was monitoring multiple times a day. The first pregnancy, I was checking my urine, mm-hmm. Which, you know, is something you could totally do if you wanted to.
Okay.
With the dipsticks. Mm-hmm. They're super cheap, like $17 on Amazon.
Okay.
So I was obsessively doing that and also was running labs on myself. Mm-hmm. again, like kind of a type A student,
I guess,
is what you had said there. Yeah, like I was trying to take every precaution I reasonably could. Like I didn't want to be reckless and ridiculous. But I also, you know, if I had had the option of going to see an OB who would have been respectful, who could have, you know, maybe ordered the labs more often, more easily, and had them as like a respectful backup option, I probably would have done that.
Totally.
But right now in the world, like that doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's just not an option. You have to either take it on yourself and or not and suffer the consequences.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, you'd probably really enjoy our other more in-depth offerings. We have a comprehensive course for mamas called 13 Moons, Epic Education for the Birthing Year, and an Everything You Need to Know course for aspiring doulas who want to change the world called the Birth Warrior Project, 120-day doula training and transformation. And for the real birth nerds who want to become home birth midwives, we have the Indie Birth Midwifery School. And you can find out about all of these options and more at indiebirth.org. That's indiebirth.org.
Yeah, I mean, even some of my very, very, very favorite OB friends probably think I'm a lunatic. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so much we don't know. So I'll send you some of my cool information. I'll post it in the show notes too.
Okay.
That I gathered about hypertension and pregnancy for myself. In the Indie Birth, A Story of Radical Birth Love book, I think I put a picture of it in there. I have like literally like a 3-inch, like 3-ring binder full of the studies that I printed out when I was pregnant with my first.
Uh-huh.
And for me, my windup was, both as a mom and then now as a midwife, is that, you know, blood pressure is a number. Mm-hmm. It's a measurement. It's not even like a concrete number, right? Like it's a measurement of one moment. And we should not be basing our decisions off of that one number. It's so, you know, what you're describing sounds like labile hypertension. Like it was going up and down, maybe mixed with like white coat. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going to get it wrong. I'll put the study in the show notes too, so people can double check me. But I want to say they did a study at one point of women with hypertension and pregnancy, And they sent them home with a 24-hour monitor. Mm-hmm. So it would take their blood pressure mm-hmm. like on the hour, every hour for 24 hours mm-hmm. in their own life environment. And they found, I want to say it was like 70% of the women who had, you know, would have been diagnosed with hypertension, gestational hypertension in the office, actually had normal blood pressure
wow.
in their life. So 70% of them had white coat hypertension.
Wow.
Yeah. And so like, what are we doing when we're forcing babies out mm-hmm. early based on this number?
Exactly.
And yeah, so it comes down to like, you know, if we could just know more about preeclampsia and like how it progresses and develops and who has just regular old high blood pressure in pregnancy and who doesn't, you know, life would be so much simpler, but we don't have that information right now. And it's kind of like, in my estimation, it's kind of like the Wild West. And the Wild West. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the Brewer diet, because obviously in my research about, you know, prenatal hypertension and preeclampsia, I came across this and I read one of the books associated with it. I just wondered your thoughts. I do feel like because of the gestational diabetes diagnosis last time, I was kind of afraid to eat anything. And I was like being so careful with sugar and like, you know, I wasn't like really freely nourishing myself. And I definitely wasn't intuitively eating. I was also told to
yeah.
use salt when I, at one point during pregnancy, which is of course like not recommended at all. Yeah.
Oh man, that's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, we have good studies that show that we should not reduce salt when someone has high blood pressure in pregnancy. It was not just Dr. Brewer. Yeah. So interesting. Yeah. I think the Brewer diet is a great starting point. And I think his work is really interesting. I've got, you know, a couple of his books sitting on my shelf here. Yeah, I think it's a good place to start. I don't know that it's the be all end all. And I think the goal, no matter what, is, yeah, getting enough calories and protein and salt. And however you do that is wonderful, mm-hmm. whether it's with his checklist or through intuitive eating or whatever. But, I mean, I'd be more than happy to take a peek at a food journal sometime if you wanted to do one. Yeah. Have your midwives talked about that at all with you?
They, have talked about weight gain. And I have a history of eating disorders, so it's a little bit tough. I feel like I've pretty thoroughly healed from those, with intuitive eating. So anytime there's like anytime there's a food journal, anytime there's a checklist, it's like a little bit daunting for me. But I definitely, I've definitely fibbed a few times to my midwives. Wouldn't tell them about the chocolate croissant I ate for breakfast earlier this week. But for the most part, I really have been, you know, trying to be really conscious of making sure I get enough protein and just nutrients in general. Trying to eat nutrient dense stuff and they're pretty satisfied with that, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, it's one of those things where I think there are times, I mean, you didn't have preeclampsia, so there's that too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know that we have time to totally get into it. I think there are women who just have higher blood pressure at the end of pregnancy. And I think there's probably a lot we don't know about. And so if we think about it, like if the body's wise and it's smart and it's doing something on purpose, like maybe there's a reason mm-hmm. certain women's bodies do that and others don't. Mm-hmm. But it's tricky because obviously like in other parts of life and in pregnancy, like high blood pressure can be not great. So I don't know how I got onto that. Sorry. Back to the Brewer diet. I think there are cases like where I'll consult with someone and they'll be like, yeah, I had preeclampsia. I was eating like barely any food mm-hmm. and was living off of Doritos, right. you know, or something.
Right.
And I'll think to myself and talk to them about like that probably could have been avoided, or that's definitely something we can tweak this time to try to avoid it. happening again. It doesn't necessarily sound that way to me, other than, like you said, if you were maybe kind of restricting even carbs and calories last time, that certainly could play into it. So, you know, it's one of those things. I get it. I work with tons of women who have the history of eating disorders, and yeah, it's hard, because without knowing kind of what a normal day looks like for you, it's hard to say if there would be something to add in or think about or ideas. But okay, you know, if you did, if you came to a place where it felt okay to do a couple days, mm-hmm, then that would be something I'd be happy to consult about.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank and if not, just keep doing what you're doing and be mindful of those components.
Yes. Yeah. And I think just that mindfulness of protein in particular, I wouldn't say it's like, I just have never really thought about my protein intake. I probably take in plenty, and then, you know, when I'm not pregnant, but sure, it's just never been on my radar until now. So.
Yeah. I feel like there were a few other things. So we wanted to talk about the transport thing. There was something else. Oh, that you're still nauseous.
Yes. Yeah.
How curious. Like often, all day, vomiting, yes, no?
No vomiting ever, but just this like gurgly, uncomfortable nausea, usually starting about 9 a.m. and off and on throughout the day, every day.
And it hasn't gotten any better?
I would say it's improved a little bit, although I am taking a homeopathic remedy that a friend who's proficient in that area recommended. And I feel like that helped, because if I run out of it for a couple days, it gets worse. And then I'm taking magnesium and B6 as well to try to help with it.
Yeah. Have you tried... And this might need to be like another call or mm-hmm something, since we're coming up on our time here. But have you tried like a right before bed snack or a middle of the night snack?
I feel like I'm definitely eating all the time. Okay. It's not unusual for me to be hungry right before bed. So I eat before bed often. The middle of the night, not as much. So that's an idea.
Yeah. It is an idea. I've seen it be pretty helpful, especially when women have nausea kind of later into their pregnancies, or if it like resurfaces, just because the blood sugar overnight can just be a long time. Okay. If you go from, even if it's a pre-bed snack, I don't know when you go to bed, but pre-bed till breakfast can be a long stretch for a pregnant body.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, we could check back in on that another time. Let's talk about this transport thing while we still have a couple minutes. So sort of where are you at with that? Like if something came up and you really were feeling like, I guess there's a few different components there though. There's the, what if my midwives want me to go and I don't want to go?
Yeah.
And then also, what if I do want to go?
Right. Exactly.
So there's sort of two different. So I guess wherever you want to start with that,
yeah,
I'd love to hear your.
So I guess my biggest fear would be that they want me to go and I don't want to go, or that they maybe introduce a fear that then I would fall into that fear pit like last pregnancy, mm-hmm, where I just don't know how to find clarity in the moment. Also just the idea of people being in my home sort of like telling me what to do or telling me that I'm, you know, going to hurt my baby or something. It's like those statements I just really don't want to hear again. I think that I feel actually more prepared to be empowered in the hospital if I choose to go, and just more afraid of like, you know, something coming up late in the game.
Right.
It's kind of foggy. I don't have a clear picture of what I'm afraid of, but more so just that they, so I'm a licensed mental health counselor. I'm specialize in perinatal mood disorders, which is really interesting to be have that perspective. But I work with a couple of people who have been transferred by these midwives. And so I've heard these sort of trauma stories of like, they just weren't progressing, or they just, you know, there was a dip in the heart rate, you know, these kind of like things that can happen, obviously, that I probably wouldn't go to the hospital for if I were on my own. I mean, maybe I wouldn't even know that was happening if I were on my own. And I know we're running out of time, but I guess part of the question is like, do I even want them here? And that's a much bigger question. You know, there's fear of like, if I just don't call them, like, could I save myself? Could I save myself? Like, am I inviting in this, like, you know, scary thing by, you know, by having them here? So obviously that's a much bigger question.
That's okay. I can go a little bit over. I'll make the other next person wait a few minutes. It's worth it. So have you had any of these conversations with these midwives around, like, you know, what happens if you want to go and I am not on board? Or
no, I think I've been afraid of putting that thought in their minds, because I'm just, again, like, I felt my doctor turn on me. I want them to not turn on me.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. It's so tricky. I guess, you know, in a perfect world, my advice would be to use all of your best skills around counseling and communication to sit down and just be really honest with them about this and be like, here's what happened last time. You know, like, I really don't want that to happen again. So it's probably better for us to talk about this up front. Like, you know, can we talk about some of the things that would actually, you know, be a thing for you, and how to have these conversations? You know, when I'm teaching midwives in our midwifery school, you know, obviously as midwives, we do have boundaries.
Of course.
And how do we communicate that to someone in a way that honors our boundaries, but doesn't negate their autonomy? And so if you were my client, or, you know, and I've had one client, who her blood sugars were way out of range and her blood pressure was way out of range. Both, like, there were a couple things going on. She came into care really late. And I said, you know, like, my midwife antenna are up and I'm not feeling great about this anymore. We were also going to be really far from a hospital, and, you know, it was hard for her to hear that. And the way I framed it was like, this doesn't mean that I think I'm right and that you shouldn't have a home. You know, I'm not saying you shouldn't have a home birth, just that I can't be the one to be with you. Like, here's some other names. If you want to talk to other midwives, if you want to have an unassisted birth, you should totally do it. Like, whatever you want to do. But, like, I'm going to bring fear into your experience, because this is feeling off. So, you know, even talking to them about that, where it's like, hey, if something comes up, like, here's what I need you to not say.
Yes.
You know, I need to not have somebody tell me their intuition is that my baby, you know, like, I need someone to not say, this is what you have to do, or you're having your baby today.
Right.
Like, I need to not be bossed around and leave space for me to disagree with you. Mm-hmm. Even if that means we part ways.
Yes.
That's in a perfect world, but also I get that, you know, there are limited options for home birth support where you are, it sounds like.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot, and you don't want to be maybe like classified as the problem client who's got all these demands.
Yes,
or something.
Exactly. And I know, like, as a counselor, it's like, you know, I want to be the person who changes someone's mind about therapists and counselors, but it's also daunting whenever I have a client say, I've had 4 experiences with therapists and they've all been shit. And now I've
heard
great things about you. And it's like, oh gosh, I hope that I will be different. But, you know, and so I didn't want that to have to be, you know, and again, I'm like projecting and trying to control it because I'm scared, but I just didn't want to be, I didn't want to raise their antenna like super early on, just be, you know, hard for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so tricky, but I think, you know, whatever you do decide to do in terms of like preparing, whether that's having a conversation with them or just thinking through your own what ifs, mm-hmm. and kind of having your own little plan unbeknownst to them. Either way, I think, yeah, there's, it's like any birth plan, right? Like the combination of both preparing and like thinking through, and then also surrendering to like, I don't know what's going to happen. And just trusting that in the moment you will be able to access what you need to access. And it sounds like that's maybe a really good place for you to focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That felt like it didn't happen for you as much last time.
Right.
Is like, how do you in those moments, even just like have a safe word or something with your partner,
mm-hmm.
being like, I like, this means you need to help me calm down for 5 minutes before we make a choice, or like, yeah, just having some of those like little mindfulness moments.
Yeah, to regroup.
Kind of planned into the experience.
Right, yeah, to regroup if things feel really kind of like they're spiraling or something.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I wish we had some more time, but I definitely wanted to make sure I said too that, so right now are your midwives taking your blood pressure at visits?
Yeah.
Like, are they doing it?
Yes, they're taking my blood pressure so far. It's been really good, and they've been just really nurturing, like letting me take some deep breaths and sort of do my little meditation for a moment before. And again, I don't even like the term letting me, but it's like so ingrained, like they let me breathe.
Sure.
They let me breathe for a minute. But no, they've been just like, yeah, really sweet, even letting me kind of like lay down during it and listen to baby first to help calm myself. And that's helped. I mean, that's worked. I've had normal blood pressures, so the first couple were higher because I was kind of riddled with fear, but
totally. Yeah. Is it in the like under 120 over 80 normal, like super, super normal?
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing.
The first one, the 130s, and after that, it's been really normal, like 118 over whatever.
How delightful. Do you ever do it yourself at home?
Yes. My husband got a manual one for fun, and I have a, like a little automatic one. And those have been, like, depending on my stress level, I've had a couple that were in the 130s, and then the rest have been, like, really, really normal. Like, almost maybe verging on a little low, but really good ones.
Yeah. That's awesome. I guess that would be my only other thought is if, you know, they do get a high one,
mm-hmm.
having a plan for what you want to be sort of, like, next.
Yes.
And my recommendation would be, and this would be the case for any client of mine, if we get a high one at the office or at their house, if it's a home visit, I want them to get like a good quality automatic
mm-hmm.
cuff
mm-hmm.
and do it at home once a week, not a million times a week, once a week, and just tell me what it is when they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to get into that habit instead, so that we don't have this drama of like every visit wondering what it's going to be and like and the performance and all of it. But you know, some of us, like myself included, I can psych myself out alone. Like I don't even need anyone to be there to get super jacked up about it.
Same.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's the same. Totally anxious just thinking about it. So, you know, that's what my recommendation would be. I do have a client right now actually who I don't think she even had a high reading. I don't remember, but she was like, it makes me really anxious when other people do it. And so she's just been keeping track in it because she tells me what she's been getting and it's her responsibility. Great. You know, if something comes up, I trust that she'll tell me. So just putting that out there as another possibility. And then I'll also send you and put in the show notes my like little handout I have about like natural like supplements and herbs and blood pressure stuff. So because even if it does start creeping up a little bit, like there's so many things to try that it sounds like you didn't even have time to try last time.
Right.
You know, everything from tons of magnesium, which I heard you say you're taking,
mm-hmm.
To, you know, passion flower tincture, to some more like heavy duty herbs, like Rauwolfia, which is slightly controversial, but works really well.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things to try.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, so I'll send that to you. Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed talking to you.
I really enjoyed talking with you. Yeah, even having these experiences of just feeling heard and nurtured, like, yeah, it makes a difference. I have a feeling I'll reference you know, our meeting today, just of one of those times. So thank you for your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I can't wait to hear about your birth.
I will let you know. And I may book another meeting with you because I just enjoyed this so much.
Awesome. Yeah, you can certainly do that. The link's pretty easy to find on the site, or you can email me.
Okay, awesome.
If you want to do that.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
If you enjoyed what you heard, please hit the subscribe button and give this podcast a 5-star review. For more enriching content and conversation around the primal physiological process that is pregnancy, birth, and beyond, please head over to indiebirth.org. And if you are in the Duluth area seeking prenatal and midwifery support, you can find Margo at duluthmidwife.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.